Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Golf Pod Kentucky, presented by KT Tape. My name is Ethan Fisher. Thanks for joining me today. And on this episode, our featured guest is going to be Chris Nowak, who is involved with PGA Hope with PGA of America headquarters. This is well-timed. There's a lot of cool stuff happening with PGA Hope right now. We've got our inaugural Hope for Heroes event in the next couple of days at Oxmoor Country Club. There's a Hope training session happening at Golf House for the PGA members in the section in a couple of days. And all of our chapters are now operating. They've got each of their first sessions of the year rolling. Those are at Quail Chase, World of Golf, Boots Randolph, and Country Club of Paducah. So a lot of good momentum for the program going right now. Chris is going to talk about some of the things that veterans and non-veterans alike, plus what professionals and amateurs can do to further help grow the program and change the lives of our nation's military members. So, on that topic, we recently announced the members of the PGA Hope Secretaries Cup team. So, for those who don't know, this event takes place during PGA Championship week, typically the Monday before the actual tournament starts that Thursday. And with the event being at Southern Hills this year, we are very excited to be sending five players in total to be playing in this tournament, which will be just outside of Tulsa at the club at Indian Springs. Our lead team member is Tim Reeves, a PGA member who teaches predominantly at Quail Chase. And then we have four veterans who have been in our Hope program in the past who will be in the field joining Tim. They are Roth Coleman, who is a former Marine, Lloyd Hall, Air Force, Steve Skaggs of the Army, and then also past podcast guest and ambassador for our section, Jen Nunez, who's also an Army affiliate. But we're very excited for the five of them. Again, that event will take place on Monday, May 16th. Just think Monday of PGA Championship Week. We're so excited for them. They'll be competing in a very fun, easygoing event against other PGA Hope teams from across the country. I think there's 12 in all who participate, but it's a very cool experience for them, and we are really looking forward to that. Speaking of players in Kentucky who have been competing outside of the state in some big-time competition, the PGA Professional Championship is finishing up as we speak. Unfortunately, none of our Kentucky guys made the cut, but a shout-out to Andrew Stevens, Blake Watts, and Mitchell Moore who competed. Grover Justice, unfortunately, had a back injury come up right before the first round and had to withdraw. But nonetheless, very proud of those four guys. You might have seen Andrew hold out for an eagle on a par four, just slam dunked it. It was very cool. But even if the result wasn't what they had hoped it would be, we're still very proud of them and thank them for their terrific representation of Kentucky golf. Also representing Kentucky golf in the first USGA Championship of the year, the U.S. Women's Amateur Four Ball, Lainey Frye and Maria Villanueva. Lainey is a Kentucky native. Maria is a teammate of Lainey's at the University of Kentucky. They will be in Puerto Rico competing in the seventh edition of that tournament. It starts on Wednesday, so it might be happening when you're listening to this, but we're looking forward to seeing what those two girls can do. Hopefully they can bring back a trophy to Lexington with them. Within Kentucky golf, some early tournament results we've got to report. We talked about Andrew Stevens a couple of seconds ago. He won Golf House Kentucky Classic 1 presented by Mobile Pro Shop. That was at Country Club of Paducah on April 11th. Andrew was the only person to break par that day. He shot a 71, which is one under. Gabe Wheeler, an assistant pro at Country Club of Paducah, finished in second. And Rocco Zakutny, one of the top young players in the state, a Paducah native himself, he finished in third and was the low amateur. We also just had the Pro Shamble presented by Levelware and supported by Hole in One USA and HMG Accessory Solutions wrap up from Woodhaven Country Club. Our winners there were Kevin Childers and Nathan Hinks, both of whom are at the club at Old Stone. They shot 63, which is something I did not think anyone would be doing that day, even in the shamble. Me and Mike Vick, our junior tour director, played together. We shot one under, and if you would have offered one under to us at the start of the day, we would have taken that in a heartbeat. But that just goes to show you how good some of these guys are. Congrats to Kevin and Nathan on their terrific play and a well-deserved victory. Last thing that I want to hit on before we dip into our interview is that the Youth on Course Caddy program here in Kentucky is now taking applications for the summer of 2022. For those who are unfamiliar with this, it is very cool. Kids who are between the ages of 14 to 18 can become a caddy, and they can work whenever they want. They don't have a specific schedule, but they can do it whenever they want at Big Spring Country Club, the Harmony Landing Course of Big Spring Country Club, or Hurstbourne Country Club. All golfers have to do is go to the Caddy Now app, and it's kind of like Uber or Lyft. You say that you need someone, and one of the caddies, if they're available, they can accept it, play that way. It's very safe. It's very fun. They get money for each round they loop, and then for every 10 loops they do, they get scholarship money that is accrued for college. It's a great program. We've talked about it on here in the past. If you listen to the very first episode of this with Jimmy Kirschdorfer, you can hear more about why it was so good. And Pete Garvey also talked about it in a more recent episode. Either way, it's really cool. There's a lot of momentum for it. If you know someone who would be interested, have them sign up. You can find out all the details about it at kyjuniorgolf.org. With all that said, let's go ahead and turn it over now to Mr. Chris Nowak. Okay, joining me now is Chris Nowak, who is a man with a lot of interesting stories to tell. Chris, thanks for being here. And biggest question right off the bat is, what kind of experience do you have with Kentucky? Have you ever been here before? And if not, what are your perceptions of the Bluegrass State?
Never been to Kentucky. Probably one of the only states I'm sitting there thinking about it. I haven't been to. The only thing I can, you know, like every other idiot and ground pounder, Kentucky Derby, you know, that's what I think of, horses. So, you know, I know it's a limited scope. I know it's probably a pat answer that everybody says who has not done any research or bothered to read up on it, but that's what I know.
A common answer as someone who grew up in Colorado and had never been here until his senior year of high school. I remember getting off the plane, and the first thing that went through my mind was that I was in the capital of the college basketball world, because at that point, Louisville had just won the national championship. UK had won a couple years previously, and basically ever since I've gotten here, both the main powerhouses here have not done anything remotely to that extent. So they can blame me for that. But yeah, enough about that. So let's talk a little bit about yourself. So can you give me a little bit of context as to what your life was like growing up before you got into the Marines?
Sure. My dad was in the military. My dad was in the Navy. So we moved significant times up and down the East Coast. Always knew my dad had, you know, we had a rule. You either pay your own way to college and go to college, or you join the service. You're not living in the basement. So that sums up my childhood.
And where did you grow up?
I was born in New York, moved to South Carolina, South Carolina to Connecticut, Connecticut to Virginia, Virginia to Key West, Key West to Connecticut, and back to the Carolinas, and then finally went to high school in Connecticut.
All right, so you've got pretty much the entire East Coast covered in some region. Yeah. All right, so that makes sense. You eventually did get into the service. So what prompted? I know you said your dad was involved, but what did it mean to you to want to serve the country, and why was it the Marine Corps that you chose?
Just growing up around it, I just assumed everybody did. You know, I just assumed that's what you did. You either went to college or joined the service. I joined the Marine Corps because I knew it would piss my dad off, for the lack of better words. So that's why I did it.
Yeah, that's the way so many father-son relationships go, isn't it?
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about your time in the service. Sure. Let's cover everything from what years you served, what your responsibilities were, right, and just everything that transpired.
Sure. I served from 83 to 89, Marine Corps infantry, nothing special at all. Overseas a couple times, did a deployment to Egypt for we were over there before it was a Desert Storm. It was Operation Bright Star. Okinawa, Philippines, Korea. I, you know, 6 years. I served and traveled a significant amount of time too in the Marine Corps. But occupation wise, was just very, very simple. I was a grunt infantryman, carried a rifle. Loved every day of it. You know, just enjoyed having, just being told, this is what you got to do, this is how we're going to do it, and this is what we're going to do. And end up becoming a squad leader. So I had my own Marines I was responsible for, and we're doing a training evolution with the Army. The Army decided to use live rounds that day and didn't notify the Marines while we were training, and I ended up taking three M16 rounds to my thigh. Oh, and God. Which resulted in the amputation of my lower leg. So I blew out my sciatic nerve, blew out my hamstring, and struck my femoral, and I was bleeding out, but they were able to save me. I was very, very fortunate with the surgeons and everything that was able to save, you know, the leg below the knee. I mean, lost below the knee, so above the knee, which is most important, to have my knee, and just been going at it ever since.
So I'm curious, not to bring up a bad memory, but yeah. So many times where I feel like I hear about a veteran having a limb amputated, it's because of something that was in action, like enemy fired at you and took an arm or a leg off. But in your case, with it being this complete accident, like what was that like? You weren't even really doing anything other than training, and yet still this happens. What was the mindset behind that?
The mindset was everybody complete panic. You know, you're not expecting it. The medic didn't have everything he needed. You know, because we were training with the Army, so they use a medic. We didn't have our own corpsman. So it was just a total, total, total chaos. Unexpected. Nobody knew what to do. Very, very fortunate that Lieutenant McCoy, he didn't panic, so you got to see what people were about. But it was stressful. You know, it was stressful, and it was a bit of anger and whatnot. But it worked really, really well. You know, as time went on, just, you know, got taken care of.
Gotcha. And when that happened, was that kind of the mark for the end of your time with the Marines?
Yeah,
or were there still a chunk of years that you did after?
In the late 80s, they just discharged us. Thank you very much. Medically retired, you know, very fortunate, medically retired from the Marine Corps. So I did 20 years. It was not a choice. I would have loved to stay in. I could pass any physical fitness test they had when I was 22. With one leg, just happens. Just a bad day, wrong place, wrong time.
Right. Right. You know? So when you retire and you move on from there, we'll introduce golf at this point. Had you played at all before you had gone into the Marines, or was it just something that you never got involved with?
Yeah. I did not play any golf, at all. Hockey, softball, sports like that. The golf wasn't even on my radar. Powerlifting, just golf wasn't even on my radar until worked for the VA for 19 years. I would probably say about 15 years into the VA, I discovered golf and saw how great it was therapeutic, how great it was physically. Everything about the game of golf resembles life, everything, the therapeutic value in that. And that's how I got into golf, and how I helped grow the program within the Department of Veterans Affairs. I was the national director for all the adaptive sports for the VA in Washington, D.C. That's how I got linked up with, before it was Scott Kimmick, they had Steve Jubb, I believe, was running the military grant portion of PGA of America before the foundation got started. I was working with him while I was with the VA. Then Scott Kimmick took over for him and developed the Reach Foundation. And that's how I met Scott Kimmick. I was with the VA.
I just left the VA, made the Rio team for 2016 for powerlifting, and blew my shoulder out going to world. So I'm sitting at home, and I reached out to Kimmich and said, hey, remember that thing we started to do with the VA when you were with PGA? Originally it was called Downrange. That was the original program when the first year we did it, and it was the first time we partnered with the VA. So I was able to get the memorandum of understanding written and signed by the secretary. I still had, you know, a fair amount of relationships within the VA. And then Scott Kimmich and I just started rolling out the HOPE program. And now we see how big it is across the country. But yeah, it was more of discovering golf by accident. I don't want to say by accident, over, you know, just looking for competitive sport to do, looking for something to do as I was getting older. My hockey was ending. Ice times were ridiculous in Philly. You know, we're getting ice times at 2 o'clock, you know, in on Saturday, or we'd sit and play, you know, 10, 11 o'clock during the weeknight. It was just, so I'm looking for something to do, and just fell in love with the game and all the therapeutic values it has. I mean, from start to finish, from the start of the round to the end of the round, it's constant, especially for veterans who are dealing with, you know, PTSD, limb loss, spinal cord injury, and just everything that golf is about and teaches you, hands down, is to me the best therapy and the best therapeutic sport there is for veterans recovering. You know, when I played hockey was an angry game. Like to fight, you know, same thing. You know, when you play softball, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to hit the ball as hard as you can. You know, you're supposed to do all those things and be aggressive with the base running, be aggressive with the throws. In golf, the worst thing you can be is angry. The worst thing you can be is aggressive. So it forces you to get out of that mindset. You know, and that's a lot. You look at the military, you look at the type of people, and that's one of the reasons the HOPE program works so well. You look at the type of people that join the military. It's an all-volunteer force, so it's usually a type A personality. They have something in them that's driving them. So you take that personality, and they're now rehabbing, whether it's from PTSD or any of these ailments they're dealing with. If you're able to introduce the game of golf as we do through HOPE, you're going to give them something that nothing else does. Medication does, therapy, having, you know, talking to somebody, other sports, and just the anger issue alone. That is the worst thing. And I'm sure all your listeners understand it way more than me, and been involved in golf a lot longer than I have. The worst thing you can do is swing angry. The absolutely worst thing. So you take someone who's a type A personality who was going to want to get better at something. At some point, they're going to learn, I can't swing angry. May not be the first round, may not be the 10th round. At some point, they're going to recognize the fact that swinging angry is not good. So that then is going to require them to develop a mechanism where they cannot be angry when they're swinging the club. So you think about that and project that to the rest of their life. If we're able to teach them that, to use their mind differently around situations and various things, then they're able to maybe go to the mall with their wives, go out to dinner and not get fidgety and not get angry if things, you know, if they're uncomfortable in the situation. That's what we're trying to do with HOPE. We're not trying to make golfers. I mean, the game's hard enough. You know? So and leave it to the pros, I like to say, you know, but that's what we're doing with golf and how we're using the game of golf for our veteran population in their rehab journey. Whether, you know, it'd be great if we could introduce the veterans to golf, you know, as soon as they're get discharged, even while they're doing that, to get that mental awareness. That's why we have a big drive towards our younger veteran population right now. But even our Vietnam era vets will come up and be like, I wish I knew about this program earlier. This could have changed, you know, could have changed my life. Could have had, you know, because I'm so different after coming here for these 8 weeks. You know, it's also the sense of belonging. They're around other veterans. It's just, that's, you know, the game resembles life, and there's no better therapy than it. Absolutely not. I just, I, you know, it, it just, it works. And if anybody, what I like hearing too, I like hearing stories from the pros who come up and say, this is the most impactful thing I've did in my career, or how can I do more, and things like that. So to me, that's when you know that you're doing something right and you have something that works, is the people who are delivering it, who couldn't do it with, you know, Hope doesn't happen without the PGA professional at all. Hope doesn't happen without PGA of America. This is what, you know, there's nothing in anywhere. There's no law. It's not the Constitution bill anywhere that says organizations, nevertheless, PGA of America have to help our veterans out, have to be part of the rehab jury. Nothing. So you have an organization that does this, and then the members, the 29,000 plus members, and the portion of them that lean in and do this program, to hear their stories are just as valuable to me as the veteran stories, because I understand the veteran perspective and I get where that's coming from. But to hear a PGA professional say, this is great, you know, best thing I've ever done with my career, how can I do more?
Awesome. That's very well said. And there's a few things from what you just talked about I want to dig further into. The first being that I did not know that you were one of the chief people, I guess, behind starting it. I thought you were one of the like 99% of veterans who like came across the program locally and got into it that way. So that's obviously very good knowledge to have. So when it came to starting this, I know you talked about how golf is mirroring life and the way it impacts veterans, but can you talk a little bit more about why it was so important for you to like start this? What made you realize that, okay, this is a need that we can meet? Where did that all come about for you?
It came about from my job at the VA. So as the director of the National Sporting Events, the VA has 6 clinics a year. The summer games, wheelchair clinic, winter sports clinic, golden age games, tea tournament, and creative arts festival. Those are 6 national events that veterans go to that they can go to in different parts of the country at different times of the year. So to me, you know, when I was doing these events and I was pushing a lot of stuff to be more local, I didn't see, you know, the expense, but the value of, you know, having all these veterans travel. Travel is very, very therapeutic for veterans too. We'll talk about that in a little while, but getting all the resources to do that and have the same veterans coming, we should be doing adaptive sports in the local community where a veteran can go and participate in the community, participate with their family, participate with their friends who they may went to high school, college with, or their neighbors and things like that. That was my thing, is not make it so and give veterans a skill set where they live. And I like using this, the story of teaching, you know, veterans from Ohio would come out to the summer clinic and we teach them how to surf. You know, that's great. I'm glad he got the confidence to get up on a surfboard, but I don't think he's surfing back in Ohio. You know, so we were doing a lot of one-offs. You know, you come for a week, we're going to teach you how to surf. One day you're going to get up on the board and you're going to hopefully ride a wave. That's it. You're never going to see a surfboard the rest of your life. It's great at that moment. But that was the catalyst of what's a sporting event or that we can do that's everywhere across the United States. And it's just a great sport that's accessible. And so that's how I got really, really like, all right, how are we going to do this? Again, I reached out to the PGA, reached out to Steve Jobs, was getting frustrated with him. PGA said, hold on, we just hired somebody who's gonna, you know, we understand your frustration and we're gonna hire somebody. And that's how it started. And Scott Kimmick and I started down that road. Yeah, I wanted to call it downrange, but he changed it to Hope after I left.
I like downrange. I think that's a very suitable name, so right. I would have no quarrels if that's what it was called. But with getting this started, obviously in the last 5 years, it's definitely changed your life. You're extremely active now within all the PGA sections across the country. Can you kind of picture what your life would be like if this never got started? Like if you didn't take this leap, where you would be today?
Probably still be riding the metro in DC, going to the VA and being miserable every day. it was perfect timing for me making a national team, deciding to leave the VA because I just wasn't happy doing my job. Literally politics, everything was just, and I was like, all right, I got to do something. So, you know, this was an opportunity that allowed me, you know, zero stress, huge latitude, and still put food on my table. So why not? Type of thing.
So what does your day-to-day schedule look like now?
Well, you know, I get up in the morning, hit the gym. Then if I have calls in the morning, depending if I have Zoom calls or meetings, if I don't, I'm going to hit golf ball somewhere. I played yesterday and got up this morning and was able to get around in before my first call today was at 1:00. So I'm very, very fortunate with that I'm able to, you know, play golf if the day allows it, and the weather here in New Jersey. But as the program has grown as rapidly as has, so has staffing. Those do all of the stuff then, you know, versus me with a spreadsheet and keeping track of, you know, what program, what were the dates and submitting invoices and stuff like that. And, you know, it was only, you know, I think we had 24 programs that I was, you know, doing all the paperwork for. Now there's over, you know, close to 100. So. But yeah, so now it's a very, very nice, very, very fortunate situation.
So. What are those chief responsibilities that you have? What are the things that you're trying to get a gauge of or maintaining with not just our section, but all the other participating ones throughout the country?
My biggest thing is trying to get PGA to remain focused. I love PGA, great, great association. Sometimes they have a tendency, what I like to call, get out in front of their skis, you know, we're going to do this. Wait a second. You know, let's back the truck up. Let's think about it. Let's, you know, figure out the best way to do it and to keep PGA focused on this is about the veteran. No matter what we do, no matter what the experience is, I also understand that, you know, we have to raise money. I get that. This doesn't, you know, doesn't fall off, you know, out of the sky to do these programs, and they're impactful and they're expensive, and so one of my goals is to remind people within PGA of America that A, the veterans are extremely thankful for everything that PGA does. Again, PGA doesn't have to do this; they do this because they believe in America. Is keep leadership focused. This is about impacting veterans' lives. As everybody likes to get focused around numbers, grow, do this, we need more of this, we need more of that, we need to remain focused on what we are providing to the veterans. So that's my main goal. I have a tendency to be very outspoken when it comes to certain things that look. This has to, you know, I mean, and who, no matter who it is. And I got very, very fortunate, have a great working relationship with Seth and Jim Richardson and whatnot. We're literally, you know, a text away. And you know, it's always responsive and always will listen to me. And when presented with the situation and facts, they always do the right thing. So I think as an organization, we're very, very fortunate to have those two leaders and those also two different styles too. So,
yeah, for sure. And I think it's pretty clear at this point, we've spoken ad nauseum about like why veterans should get involved and how it can benefit them. But I asked a similar question to a gentleman who's in our HOPE program here in Kentucky that we had on this podcast last year. And I asked him how non-veterans can get involved. And when I say non-veterans, I also mean non-PGA professionals, like your typical amateur golfers out there. First of all, how can they get involved with it? What can they do to do their part? And then what's the benefit of them in taking a role in helping further build this program?
There's a couple different ways. I mean, obviously money. You know, they can go to pjreach.org and donate. I mean, that's not my gig, but somebody else needs money. What I like to tell supporters are people who don't really have a dog in the fight, not a PGA professional, they're not a veteran, is, you know, it takes a nation to heal a veteran. And they can be part of that healing process as well. Not just the VA, DOD, PGA professionals, but everyday citizens. So if you have an everyday citizen, obviously you can donate. There's always need for volunteers at the range, at the clinics when they're doing that. I also tell them, if they're golfers, look at maybe getting with your buddies and see if you have some used clubs and used bags that you can donate to the HOPE program. So you have veterans who may not have clubs who will then have a set of clubs. So I just like to, you know, I tell them that they can be part of the process, and there's no reason that everybody can't be part of the process, but they don't have to be part of the process too. I'm a firm believer in that, you know, people need to do what they feel is right. So if they feel they want to thank a veteran for the service, or they want to do this, or they want to, you know, buy a veteran a cup of coffee or buy a police, that's great. But nothing says they have to do that. And as veterans, we knew what we signed up for. We volunteered. You know, it's great that people thank us for our service and everything else, and that people recognize it, and it makes us feel grateful and gives us encouragement and why people do join. But it does, you know, nothing says that they have to. The only people that have to is the VA. Yep. You know, I mean, so when I see, you know, especially PGA, how much they've leaned in and its members, it's just like, this is great.
Yeah. And talking about ways that people can get involved, one of the chief ways to do so is through Patriot Golf Day, which is coming up on Memorial Day weekend. And this used to be on Labor Day weekend, but appropriately and fittingly, it's now Memorial Day weekend, and it's had a lot of success in the last several years ever since it got instituted. For those who aren't familiar with this whole weekend and its premise, can you give the context as to what it entails and how they can contribute by getting involved during this weekend?
So we use Memorial Day for Patriot Golf Day in partnership with Folds. Folds, as we know, they used to do their Patriot Golf Day on Labor Day, but Memorial Day is to recognize those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice. That's the group that day is set aside for, people who have died during service. So Folds provides the scholarships for deceased family members, as well as PGA HOPE graduate members too. I need to let everyone know that. But the Patriot Golf Day is over 4 days, over Memorial Day weekend. You can donate online, obviously, foldsofhonor.com. I mean, foldsofhonor.org, I'm sorry. But your course should have a QR code that you can just scan it. If you want to donate $1, $5, or the pro, if they registered their course for Patriot Golf Day, they then can say, would you like to round up for, you know, 70 cents or whatever. But I think what's unique now about this and what we're doing this year and why we're working with Folds is the money is staying local. So what I mean by that is any money raised over Memorial Day weekend, those 4 days in the Kentucky section, all of the money stays in the Kentucky section, and this is how it stays. 50% dollar for dollar that's raised goes directly to the HOPE program. The other 50% goes to scholarships of family members and HOPE veterans in your section that money is raised. So as we all know, and I'm sure your listeners have been familiar with, I gave this organization $50. What happened? You know, what's an organization do with that? You know, it goes up to some big office and they blah, blah, blah. This is why we focused it so it stays, the money stays locally. So, I mean, if you know, if your section raises $50,000 over those 4 days, that's $25,000 that goes to your HOPE program to do with as you want. It doesn't impact any funding we'll provide you next year or any of the funding that we provided you this year. So that's money you can use if you, you know, we tell sections, if you want to take that money and buy veterans golf clubs, you do that. If you want to take that money and start a Tuesday night league for veterans, you do that. That's money that the section has to spend at their discretion. And the scholarship money stays within that section too. So it's a unique thing that we developed this year with Folds to get more PGA professionals and more courses registered. I think right now they're up to almost 400 right now of courses registered throughout the country.
Hey everybody, this is going to be our KT Tape intermission report for the episode. What I'm about to do is drop an audio clip from a video that KT Tape has on YouTube, just kind of giving an overlay on what their product does and how it can help people out. So my voice is going to fade out here in a second. You're going to hear a few other voices from people associated with KT Tape. Stick around, take a listen to it, and then we'll get back to Chris here in just a moment.
For serious athletes, getting hurt is not an if, it's a when. And when the pain hits your knees, your back, or any one of the many injuries common among athletes, KT Tape is there to help. KT Tape is a drug-free elastic sports tape that works when it's stretched and applied to the skin using simple techniques. Chris Harper, a practicing physical therapist, explains how KT Tape works.
There have been a wide range of scientific studies aiming to measure and analyze the effects of different kinesiology tape application techniques. Researchers have hypothesized that the effect of kinesiology tape can largely depend on how the tape is applied. While the effects are still being evaluated clinically, researchers believe kinesiology tape has the ability to affect pain perception and mechanical processes in the body. With some applications, it is believed kinesiology tape can affect an athlete's sensory feedback, also known as proprioception, through receptors in the skin and in turn influence movement in the body. In other application techniques, kinesiology tape has been shown to reduce pain, making it an excellent drug-free alternative. Another technique has been theorized to facilitate lymphatic drainage following an injury by lifting the skin, thereby helping reduce swelling. Due to the elastic properties and breathability of KT Tape brand kinesiology tape, it is an excellent alternative to other contemporary taping techniques.
Professional athletic trainers, chiropractors, and physical therapists across the country, like Chris, trust KT Tape to provide patients pain relief and support for many common injuries. I use KT Tape products on aching knees during and after runs, on quads, hamstrings, and my lower back for gym workouts, and even on my shoulder when I play basketball. But those are just a few of the many uses for KT Tape.
KT Tape products can be used for a number of soft tissue, muscle, tendon, and ligament injuries to provide pain relief. Back pain, shoulder pain, knee pain, plantar fasciitis, shin splints, and tennis elbow are just a handful of many injuries for which KT Tape products can be used to help you recover faster from pain. What's really great about KT Tape products is how easy they are to use. KTTape.com has over 50 step-by-step, easy-to-follow application videos to help you become an expert taper in no time. In these short, 2-minute videos, you can learn how to tape yourself for some of the most common sports injuries.
KT Tape has a full line of recovery products available at KTTape.com or any one of thousands of major and independent retailers across the country. Find it at a store near you in the pharmacy or first aid section near the tapes and bandages, as well as most sporting goods sections by the braces and wraps. So don't ignore those nagging sports injuries any longer. Find drug-free pain relief with KT Tape so you can train longer and finish stronger.
Between it and everything else regarding PGA Hope, what kind of goals and objectives do you have, both in the short term and the long term, as it comes to continuing to further grow the program?
I think we need I would like to look at using the program to give veterans an opportunity. We currently do it with the ambassador program. The veteran goes back and represents their hope in their section. I would like to see us try to figure out an employment, kind of looking at an employment section of it, or some way that we can get veterans into, we'd like to get them into the workforce, hopefully, and get again, but start having them use the skill sets that they've developed while in the military. This is what we've did it in a couple. I think the Met section and the Philly section, I believe that we're doing almost like a job fair for Hope graduates in courses. What I tell the pro, you know, people who are running courses, GM, veteran's going to be on time, if not early, going to do every task you tell them. He's not going to steal from you, and he's going to do the right thing, you know, to get, so to get them to start looking at using that as an employment base. And I think I'm trying to figure out how to do it more programmatic. Like, okay, when you get done with HOPE, or this is a whole nother separate entity, but I'd like to see more veterans in the golf industry and using the HOPE program through entry-level position employment type of stuff.
Yeah, we started implementing the same thing a little earlier this year in Kentucky. I think we had, gosh, I don't know what the exact number was off the top of my head, but we had somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 30 golf courses get involved or fill out an interest form in doing it. So there's a lot of facilities here that are interested in doing that, which is great. But with yourself, I'm not sure what your skill level on the golf course is, but you know, if you're happy on the golf course, that's all that matters. And that's what this program promotes. But between you as a player and you as a person, what are you looking to for your own goals personally as you continue to improve and develop in all forms of life?
I'm trying to work myself out of a job. I'm trying to make sure that each section has their own veteran that they can use to do things. And I'd like to be, you know, I'd like to see, we've had one veteran who was an ambassador now finally getting a job at their section, you know, running and doing the whole program and being their military person. So yeah, you know, over the next year, I would really, really like to see more of that happen and continue to grow the program to work myself out of the job. Golf wise, I broke 80 twice last year. I'd like to break it three times this year. And just play as much as possible. I just can't get enough.
Good goal to have. Yeah. And so we're gonna transition into what I call a rapid fire segment, where we throw out random questions, both golf related and not golf related, and you don't need to give me any reason or explanation for what your answers are, but I guess not. We'll make an exception for this one. You brought it up earlier, and I had to mention that you talked about how you were going to be nearly in the Olympics a few years ago at Rio during weightlifting. Can you talk a little bit more about that and yes, how that hobby came about?
So I've been working out since in high school, and then as soon as I got out of the Marine Corps and got out of the VA, I just said that's my thing. I love to work out. I love to lift heavy. So I made the Paralympic team, the national pair. I played, well, back up a little bit. In 2002, I was on the USA amputee hockey team. We played stand-up hockey, traveled all over the world, played over in Russia, played at the 2002 Paralympics in Salt Lake.
Nice.
And then just as I got older, just started focusing more on my lifting and, you know, made the national team and was going to Worlds, won nationals, and I was going to Worlds and was trying to get my qualifying lift at a national meet and blew my shoulder out. So then it was okay, no more heavy, focus on golf.
Yeah. Golf can cause injuries, but they're usually not that painful.
Yeah.
All right, on to rapid fire now. Right. So you've talked about being a big hockey nut. Who is your favorite NHL team?
The Bruins.
Well, the correct answer is the Colorado Avalanche, but
okay. Well played.
But you could make the argument that both of those teams have the best first lines in the entire league right now. Yeah. So not a bad choice. Hopefully a cup final matchup here in a couple of months.
That'd be nice.
What is your favorite golf course that you've ever played?
Sage Valley.
Do you have a dream foursome, and do you know where you all would play?
My foursome would be Kid Rock, John Daly, and my buddy Newton, that I, my friend down here at golf, because all I know, we would just drink every hole all day and just have a fun time. That's what I want to do. That would be it.
Oh, I love it. Do you have any holes in one at this point?
No, my brother has three and reminds me every day.
What is your favorite golf tournament that you have attended to this point?
Oh, Ryder Cup. Yep.
What golf tournament that you have not attended do you most want to visit?
I'd like to do the Masters, yeah.
What's your favorite golf book?
I haven't seen it in a long time. Hopefully I get it right. The Little Red Book about golf.
Yeah.
Yep. That's
Harvey Pinnock.
Yeah. Yep.
What's your dream vacation spot?
Dream vacation spot. Wow. Key West.
Nice. And then last question, is there anything that you are binging or streaming at a very strong rate on Netflix or any other streaming app right now?
Yes, FX Snowfall.
Okay, that's a new answer. I've never heard of that show.
Check it out.
Give me the Cliff Notes version of what it's
Cliff Notes version. It's how crack cocaine became crack cocaine and how it played the inner city. It's well done, and it's not a documentary by no. It's along the lines of The Wire.
Yeah, The Wire is one of the shows I most want to check out, and it stems from I'd never watched Breaking Bad until a couple years ago. I loved it. It's my favorite show now. So now I'm into that whole drug TV show phase, right, between like Narcos, everything else, and The Wire is on my list because I've heard people say for a long time that it's arguably the best TV show ever produced. So that's on my list, and then I'll probably have to add that then.
Yeah, add the Snowfall. You're really going to like Snowfall. I think Snowfall filmed phenomenally, just really, really, you know, you're like, wow, that's how that shit came about. And it's really cool. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, I will add it to the list. Yeah. But Chris, thank you for that recommendation. Most importantly, thank you for your service to the United States and for everything you do now in your role with PGA Hope. It's been a pleasure having you on here. Hopefully at some point we can meet face to face and tee it up together.
Would love to.
But this has been a good time. Thanks for exposing all of us to your life, what you do, and telling us how we can all continue to make a difference.
Thanks so much. And again, you know, having this opportunity to talk about Hope, talk about what PGA is doing for Forbes Nation veterans, I thank you, and I really appreciate it.